Well, good morning and welcome to Blue Valley Baptist, the Antioch campus. Grateful that you've come here this morning and worshiped together. Just a beautiful thing. This has been a very interesting week in the life of our church family. Two funeral memorial services this week. The first for Howard Shaney and then yesterday for Annalise Pragel. Different storylines, different generations, but the same truths pouring out of their lives. Howard, a man committed to the Lord, committed to his family, faithful story, life of faithfulness repeated over and over again to the point where for 22 days he was in the hospital, shared the gospel with everyone who came in his room, made good friendships. For those who knew him, came in, vested himself even more relationally with them, sharing how much they meant to him, encouraging them, life fulfilled, coming to the point where he knew that it was time for him to be with the Lord and praying, God, I want to see you, desire so much to hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant, which he did. A man's testimony lived out. Annalise Pragel, little one, only been with us for about 3.5 years. Kevin and Candace, lives of faithfulness in spite of what the state said, in spite of what doctors said, in spite of what people said, living their lives in faithfulness to the King in the promise that he gave them in Annalise, who was only to have lived for hours, but lived for 3.5 years. And to hear the story of faithfulness of their lives yesterday was amazing, encouraging. I love to hear stories of people. It's awesome to be able to share our own stories, but to be able to hear stories of followers of Jesus who, in spite of, have walked with, endured, been strengthened by, lived through different things in their lives, and how God in that has been brought glory and honor because of their yielding to him is always an encouragement. So while there were tears this week at both, for me, of those services, there was also great encouragement because I saw examples of people who lived their lives for the King. If you were here at either one or both of those, you experienced the same. If you weren't and you've been at one before, to hear a life story told of someone who's gone to be with the Lord, you too were encouraged in those moments. And that's part of our responsibility to one another as followers of Jesus. We give encouragement, we share encouragement, we receive encouragement from one another to continue to plow this life that is very challenging for us. We must be telling our stories with people. We must be sharing the story of the gospel to a lost and dying world and to those who need desperately the hope of Christ. And that's done consistently in our lives, not just with our words, but with our actions, our attitudes, the very people that we are, making a difference and striving for that, not for our own glory or for our names to be lifted up, but for his to be lifted up. That is this life we are in. I think at times we would like to say that if we had a map, maybe the size of this table, and that map spanned our lives, that it would be a straight line. But we know better than that. There are things that come into our lives that we're not prepared for that at times can take us to a way that we never expected, a 90-degree turn, a 180-degree turn. Something changes. And so if to this point all of us mapped our lives, it would not be a straight line. It would be crooked. There'd be some bends, some curves, some curls. It would be different. It would not be a straight line. Well, that's the same of the Bible. The Bible is not written, this version that we have for most of us, unless you have a chronological Bible that you've brought with you, it's not written in a straight line. And we see curves and twists and turns all the way through it. And so a chronological Bible can help us be able to see, okay, what fits where. We have three books we're covering today. Not going to get through all of them. Daniel, Ezra, and Zechariah. Well, Daniel and Ezra are pretty far apart. Zechariah actually, close of the Old Testament, they're all pretty far apart from one another, but chronologically they all line up, and so it helps us to see that the way that we have our Bibles now is not a straight line. It's twisted, but chronologically we can help it get straightened out, but it's still going to be filled with twists and turns. The prophetic books span hundreds of years. And of course, we see Jerusalem being established, being torn down, trying to be rebuilt, being torn down. And the challenges that we've already talked about. As you know, we are in a series, if you've been here longer than a week, walking through the entirety of the Bible in 6 months, all with the single thread of Jesus being the central piece of it. That is a key for us, that we can see him working and moving all the way through it, from Genesis 1:1 all the way to the end of Revelation. It's important for us to have a grasp of that, not only for our own lives, to be able to communicate the gospel more effectively, but for those around us to have that base is important. So we've been base building for weeks, months now, and we continue. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be in the New Testament. We'll finish the Old Testament at that point, and that will be encouraging for us as well. So if you've got three books that you're going to put fingers in to be ready for this morning, first is Ezra. We're going to start there. You can turn there in your Bibles. The second we're going to look at is Daniel. Then we're going to come back to Ezra, and then we're going to try to get to Zechariah. So we'll just do the best that we can. But we're going to start by reading this morning Ezra chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, and then we're going to jump into verse 2. Let's start. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout his kingdom and also put it in writing. Thus says Cyrus, the king of Persia, the Lord of God of heaven has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever is among you of all his people, may this God be with him. And let him go up to Jerusalem, which is Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. And let each survivor, in whatever place he sojourns, be assisted by the men of his place with silver and gold, with goods, with beasts, beside freewill offerings for the house of God that is in Jerusalem. Jump down to 2:1. Now these were the people, the province, who came up out of the captivity of the exiles whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried captive to Babylonia. They returned to Jerusalem and Judah, each to his own town. So we see the establishment in these verses of Jerusalem coming around, the proclamation of Cyrus, people sojourning, making a way back, looking to reestablish what once was, possibly to even better. Then we jump to Daniel, the book of Daniel. Two of the best known life stories that we see in all the Bible, most people have at least heard or know about, are two that are found within the first six chapters. The first, Daniel, if you'll turn to chapter 3, we see three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Or if you are a VeggieTales watcher, Rack, Shack, and Benny. We see these guys who refused to bow to an idol before the king, even though the declaration had been made, even though it was said, if anyone doesn't bow, doesn't do that, these guys, whoever it is, men, women, children, if they refused to bow, would be put to death. And so we pick it up in Daniel 3:13. When Nebuchadnezzar found out that these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, refused to bow, he went into a furious rage. And he commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a fire, burning fiery furnace. Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." So here's the story. Three men in all of the province decided, we are not going to do this. The king, death, come before me, enraged. I'm taking your lives today. If you bow now, we'll call it good. But if not, it's over. So these three men, refusing to bow, do what? Furnace seven times hotter than normal, to the point where when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were walked up to the furnace, the guards that were leading them there were consumed and burned up and died. But for some reason, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what happened to those guys? They're still alive and walking. So they walk into the furnace, it says. And later the king looks in, and what does he see? He sees four. He asks the people, I thought we sent in three. Was there a fourth? No. It was an angel of God protecting them. He even fully had them dressed in a robe, a headpiece. They were covered. They should have been consumed immediately, but instead, God rescued them. So he called to them, come out. So here come the men. They come out. What's the result? The king's heart, the word said, was turned. And people were turned as well. The nation began to turn a different direction because the faithfulness and consistency of those three guys that fully trusted in the Lord. And here's the piece that we can't miss. In what we read, it said, when the guys responded to the king, God will deliver us. But if he doesn't, even if he doesn't, although we believe he will, we will not bow even in that moment. Because our faith and trust is placed in our God. The result, the nation turns. Howard Chaney, unwilling to turn, shared the gospel where he went. If you knew Howard, you knew that was his story. That was his life story. Unashamedly proclaiming the gospel. If you were not here, you didn't hear the story. The bank president, where he worked still, closed a portion of the bank. Others from other banks came to be a part of where those who wanted to come to the funeral could be here for. And he opened up the opportunity for any employee to come to the bank. That's very unusual. Corporate world, very unusual. What does that say about Howard? Volumes. If you suddenly died, or if I, of course I'm a pastor, hopefully you would come. If you died and there was a funeral, would your boss close down the plant, close the store, close the bank, wherever you are, so that the people you're involved with currently could come and celebrate a life without knowing that they were going to hear the gospel? That's a life worth living, worth following. Annalise Pragel, 3.5 years. Couldn't write. Couldn't verbalize her story of faithful parents. But Candace could. What did Candace do? She had a blog. What did she include in that blog? Their life story and who they were and where they were and how God was faithful to them in spite of sharing the gospel over and over again. Over 18,000 followers, Derek shared in Candace's blog. And the stories that came back to the Pragels, I've been out of church for a long time, I'm a follower of Jesus because of your example, because of you sharing what you have. I've returned to the Lord. I've returned to my church. Lost people hearing the gospel, seeing the testimony shared, saved as a result of Annalise's life and faithfulness in spite of. People who are walking through the same life experiences that they were, encouraged, challenged, motivated. So the first question for us today is this. How are people being motivated who come into contact with us? Is it spurring them on towards knowing Jesus if they're lost? Is it encouraging believers that are struggling and hurting? Are our life stories speaking so loudly the gospel and a love for Jesus and a love for people that it's making a practical difference in the lives who come into contact with us? Whether through social media or in person. You may say, well, listen, I don't know if I could be a person like that. You don't know what my life is like. You don't know what my family's like. We come to church, we put on the face, everything's fine when we walk in the door. But we get home, it's a nightmare. And you actually expect or are asking for us to make a difference with our neighbors? To share the gospel in places when I'm wrestling with the gospel myself? To walk into work when there's corruption and there are things that are happening that I shouldn't be a part of? Not just work-related, but conversations. Men with women being sidelined or talked about as objects. And instead of having the courage to stand up and say, I'm not going to be a part of that conversation, we stand and we listen and we chuckle and we move on. Guys, if that's us, we're not living how God has called us to. We're supposed to separate ourselves from that. Sam's Club, 1999 to 2000, in the process of meeting my bride, Tiffany, my boss initially. She's still my boss. There were guys that would stand in the front of Sam's, my bosses. Shania Twain video would come on, 1999 to 2000. I do not listen to country music typically. You may love it. High five and cowboy hat for you. I was not. Shania on the screens. These guys would stand in the front. Oh man, look at her. And they'd begin to talk. And then when women would come into the club, we called it the club, Sam's Club. It's the only club I really have ever been to, the club. Walk in the door and they'd pick out these women and they'd start talking about them. And I'd walk away. And they would be like, what is up with that dude? What a weirdo. Does he not like girls? I'm 29 years old. Does he not like girls? Why isn't he married yet? Of course, that was the thing back then, not as much now. What is wrong with him? And then when I was asked, outside of those conversations they had with themselves, I just flat out told them, I love Jesus and I just don't want to talk about women that way. It's just not my deal. And it opened up avenues for me to talk to them about the gospel. Women, same result, same thing. Men enter. Oh my gosh, look how whatever is said about those guys. And the conversation starts and this whole emotional upheaval comes and you're a Christian woman in the midst of that. And if you're still standing there listening to the conversation when it goes somewhere where it shouldn't, and you chuckle and laugh and you step away, you also, God has better for you. And he wants the light of Christ to shine through you better. It seems that in the past, men have been more prone to stand and engage in those conversations, at least in public. But if you've had the courage and the time to go to Blue Valley High School and work in Tiger Paws at least once, you will see those conversation lines are not just with guys. In fact, at times worse with the girls. Our world's upside down. God is looking for people of courage. He is looking for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's for us to say, I'm not going to compromise, not to put people down, but because you love God and you love people so much that you're going to choose not to be involved in those things. And you're going to step away from it. And it's going to prompt questions. We realize that in our lives, we will face opposition, right? If we choose a different standard in a different road, we will face opposition to the point where it may cost us our jobs, our livelihoods, if we refuse to compromise. It will cost us friends. How many of you experienced that? If you truly love Jesus and live it out, it is going to cost you relationally. But what's the hope of the result? That the gospel will be so held out that some of those who see you, who see Christ in you, who see the gospel lived out in your life, will turn and find him. Tell me this. Would it be worth your entire life if you were one like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and you made the decision, I'm not compromising, I'm not going to be involved in those conversations, I'm not going to pour guilt on people, I'm just going to step away from it, I'm not going to be in it. And only one person found Jesus as a result. Your entire life, let's say you make it to 90, and let's say you've lived that way the entire life, and your neighbors and your friends and the people you come into contact with in the stores and your schools, everywhere you go, one person finds Jesus as a result. One. Let's say you're not even the one to share the gospel with them. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, but at some point, they turn and they've seen a difference in your life. Would your life have been worth it? Oh, my land. Would your life have been worth it? Without question. What if you're just a seed planter? What if you are constantly sowing in the gospel and you never see on earth what happens as a result of you living a life out? Is it still worth it? Is it still worth it? Consider the one who died for us, who came, left heaven, lived, died, loved, sacrificed, gave his life for us to have a relationship with him, poured his life out for us. We are not our own. If we have surrendered our lives to Jesus, we are bought with a price, the blood of Christ. We are not our own. Think Jesus has regrets? Perfect life lived out, sin of humanity, past, present, future cast on him. Think he has regrets? No. How many regrets do we have? Good decisions, poor decisions. Does God want us to stay in a life of regret? No. Why would he want us to live that way? He knows your name. David, Mark, Paul, he knows your name. Rachel, Melissa, every person in the room, he knows your name. He knows your every thought. We sang it to him. You know my name. You know my every thought. You see each tear that falls. There were some tears this week. And you hear me when I call. Doesn't always feel like it. But if we surrender our lives to him, he does. Who promises that? Who offers that? Who fulfills that? Who can do that? Can you? Do you know my every thought? Let's have a conversation. I doubt it. Do you see every tear that was falling from my eyes this week? No. But God does. So why does that matter? It matters that we are known. Why? Because the God of the universe, the creator of all, the thread, Genesis to Revelation, knows you and loves you. And he wants you to walk in power and obedience and love and mercy and grace and peace and extend it to people around us. He loves you. Have you forgotten? He knows your name. Have you forgotten? When you walk into work Tuesday or school, are you going to remember? He knows my name. The God of the universe knows my name. He is with me. His presence is in my life in even stronger ways than Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I'm walking in, and I've got his presence in my life. Does it matter? Does it even register on our minds and hearts when we go places? Can we even realize, really, that a holy God loves us like that? If we did, would it make a difference when we're grilling in the backyard and talking to our neighbors? When we're walking in Price Chopper and grabbing bananas and Chateau milk and all the other good stuff? We walk into work and we've got somebody sitting next to us or someone in the next office who obviously is hurting and desperate in need of Jesus or who's oblivious to all of it. Does it make a difference when we walk into the places where we go? If it doesn't in your life, I am telling you and I'm telling myself God has better for you than what you are living. Now, he may not, if you experienced the fiery furnace to death, release you, rescue you. He may not do that. That's the extreme. That's death for our faith. It's the extreme. But in being friends with a lot of you, and as we've shared stories over 10 and a half years, there have been multiple fiery furnaces in our lives. And life has been difficult. And if we looked at the map of our lives on a piece of paper, we would be amazed at how many twists and turns there have been. Right angles, Ellie Shaney, 6 weeks ago, no idea. Howard wasn't even sick. Kevin and Candace Pragel, 5 years ago. And us. We would be amazed at how many twists and turns there have been. But in spite of that, if we surrender our lives to Jesus and we follow him, what's the result? The presence of God. And hopefully a testimony of sustained relational strength with the king. Can't even get to Daniel in the lion's den, not going to get to Zechariah, not going to get to Ezra. Dang it. Let me read these verses and we'll close it. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. The cry of Paul the apostle, unbelievable, earlier, cry of Timothy, it's amazing, the cry of New Testament followers that we read about, Paul in particular, for I am already being poured out as a drink offering. I am sacrificing my life for Jesus. And the time of my departure has come. It's about time to be with the Lord. Two people from our church family this week with the Lord. I have fought the good fight. Those two fought the good fight. I finished the race. They finished their race here. I have kept the faith. Howard. Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Our lives are to be poured out for the king. That's it. How are we doing? If you're not further now, relationally strengthened, relationally connected, driven by the Lord more now than you were a year ago, there's something wrong. 5 years ago, there's something wrong. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whenever you came to Christ. If on the map you would consider yourself to be at a stopping point, one little bullet, and you've not moved, there's a problem. We are to continually pour our lives out for the king, good and bad. And we are called to do it together. If you are here today and you have yet to have shared with anyone the furnace you're in, if you are in a furnace right now, and believe me, I know as well as you do, many in the room are in a big furnace. May look different, may feel different. If you're in a furnace and you've yet to tell anybody, why haven't you? There are people in this church family, if you've been here for longer than a week, believe it or not, who love you and care about you, want to hear about your furnace, want to walk in it with you. You're not called to do it alone. You've got the presence of God too, yes, but people want to walk through that with you. Will you take a chance and do it? Is it possible you get burned as a result? Yes. Is it possible you get encouraged as a result? Yes. I'm not the Holy Spirit, and I can't see your heart, and you can't see mine. But it's something we are called to do. To be the people of God together. If you've not yet shared it, will you? If someone shared their furnace story with you, and you said, I'll pray for you, are you? am I? Do we have a list on our steering wheel of all the names of people that are really struggling and walking through it? Not to sit there and read it while we're driving, but when we get in, do we have our short list of people that have shared their furnaces? God, I pray for this person in their furnace. God, I pray for this person in their furnace. Help them, be with them. Help them to know your presence. Help me to be a better friend. Help me to be an encouragement. Help me to be the hands of Jesus to them. Are we serious about that? Are we investing? If you're missing that in your life, you're in a really good place with the Lord. God is preparing you for your next furnace. And he's calling you to invest in the lives who are in one right now. How are you doing?